Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Spring is yet to bring the really fine weather that we'd hope for, but hay fever sufferers will have noticed the arrival of the spring flowers. The blossoming trees mean a higher pollen count. So what is the best way to manage your hay fever? I'm here now with Professor Patrick Mitchell, who's a respiratory consultant physician at Tallaght University Hospital and Trinity College. And Patrick is also a member of the Asthma Society of Ireland's Medical Advisory Group. So if you have any questions on hay fever, how to treat it, plenty of advice available here. Text us on 51551. Patrick, you're very welcome. Lovely to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Claire, and I'm delighted to be here.
Really is the time of year, isn't it, when people start thinking about what might be coming and experiencing symptoms for the first time.
Yes, it is. Traditionally, tree kicks off, followed by grass, followed by ragweeds. And indeed, an awful lot of our patients who have hay fever also have concomitant asthma. So it kicks off their asthma symptoms as well. A lot of your listeners may be wondering why I'm here, that hay fever is a fairly innocuous ailment. But as a lot of people who have hay fever know, it's not.
It is written off a bit, isn't it? You know, ask your hay fever. Everyone, you know, a lot of people deal with that and you just get on with it. But it can be very debilitating.
It can be very debilitating. And it also has a huge economic cost. It's estimated to cost the European Union in the order of about 50 billion a year in terms of the economic cost of lost productivity. We talk about absenteeism and presenteeism, and they are certainly very relevant when people are suffering from hay fever and asthma.
And it can make you feel miserable.
Absolutely miserable. The good news is that there are treatments out there. So there are several different types and different classes of medications that both your GP, a respiratory specialist, if you're seeing someone, an ear, nose and throat doctor, or indeed a pharmacist, is well placed to advise on in terms of inhaled and topical preventers and relievers. And there's also things that you can do in terms of reducing your exposure to allergens. And it's knowing what you're actually allergic to in the first place and educating yourself and reading up on, for example, what the pollen count is. And Met Éireann has a very good website broken down into the provinces in terms of that.
So how do you find out what you're allergic to? How do you go about knowing exactly what it is that's triggering this?
So an awful lot of people, through adverse experiences, so they pet a cat and they know that they're allergic to a cat, or they're out on a lovely day in the middle of spring and they notice that their nose is running and their eyes are watering and very itchy, or their palate can get itchy. So an awful lot of people are actually able to tell me, I know that this X and Y is actually causing a problem. However, there can be confounders. So there's a rose allergy where you see roses out and you think it's rose which is actually causing the problem, when it's actually not, it's tree pollen. There are simple tests that can be done, such as skin prick testing, which is where we introduce a very low dose of an allergen into the skin. And if you have a reaction to that, we can tell and we can identify what you're allergic to, which is really important when we're tailoring our treatments for patients who have actually very severe forms of hay fever, where we can introduce something called slits and skits, which is some sublingual immunotherapy and subcutaneous immunotherapy. And that's where it really involves the patients actually getting very involved in their own care, but it involves a daily treatment of a very low dose of the allergen to which they're actually sensitized to. And over time, it retrains the immune system to become more tolerant of it.
Mm-hmm. But you'd only be using that in severe cases, would you?
You'd only be using that in moderate to severe cases. Yes, that is correct. Mm-hmm.
But for everybody else, there are simple measures that you can take. So, and we've heard before on this programme about taking a shower at night to get all of those pollens off your skin. Do you recommend doing that?
100%. And anything you can do to reduce your exposure is really, really well worthwhile taking heed of. And there's great advice actually on the asthma.ie website in terms of this. So obviously I'm plugging that today because it is a great resource for patients who are out there who are suffering with mild to moderate disease. In terms of treatments, what we have different classes of medications, such as antihistamines. It's really important for your listeners to know, because there's a bit of scepticism rightly placed in terms of antihistamines, and that they can be very sedating. And I don't want to give my young child an antihistamine if they're not performing to their full capacity. The new classes of antihistamines have actually very much a reduced side effect of that sedating effect. Mm-hmm. So a conversation with your GP or your pharmacist is really well placed in terms of that.
So you can get those over the counter?
You can get those over the counter, absolutely.
And they're safe to give to children in the correct dose?
They absolutely are, Claire.
Okay, so that's one treatment that you can use. But before you use your antihistamine, there's something you can do called a nasal rinse. Do you recommend that?
I do recommend a nasal rinse. A nasal rinse is actually a very effective form of treatment in an awful lot of patients, and it reduces the amount of allergen in the nasal passages, which can reduce your symptoms during the day. The problem that an awful lot of patients have actually is that it can leave a little bit of residual water within the sinuses that can drip out at an untoward time, which none of us want happening to us. So I do appreciate that. But there are really good websites which can actually teach you how to actually take that effectively and how to drain the nasal sinuses effectively to save you from that embarrassment if that is something that's precluding you from using it. Mm-hmm. But it's a very effective treatment. And again, as you can imagine, the only side effect of that is the embarrassment.
Okay. And that's a daily thing that you should be doing, isn't
it?
It's a
daily thing.
If you suffer from hay fever.
It's a daily thing throughout the season when actually hay fever is at its highest levels.
Okay. And then, so we've talked about the antihistamine in the oral form, the tablet. You can also get it in a spray, can you?
You absolutely can get it in a spray, and that's actually quite effective for some young kids who themselves mightn't be very good at actually sniffing back like I'm doing now. And there are other treatments as well. There are topical steroids which patients can utilise. These are prescribed medications. And there are also other classes of medications called the sodium chromoglycates, which are available both over-the-counter and prescribed. So there are treatments out there that people really should be grasping for if hay fever is interrupting their quality of life.
Everyone wants to know, though, what is the best one? Like, what's the most effective treatment to take? Does that depend on what you're experiencing?
So it's a very good question, actually. And an awful lot of this can be trial and error in terms of actually trying to utilise the best treatments for the best patient in terms of a remedy. And it can be trying one medication over another. There are now combinations, though, where we have a topical antihistamine with a topical oral corticosteroid, mm-hmm. which are very effective treatments that we can utilise.
Okay. Lots of questions coming in.
Okay.
This person has a mystery for you. They suffer from really bad hay fever most years, but last year I had nothing. And that happens every few years. Is there a reason why that might be happening?
I would love to see them in my research domain.
To find out what they've been exposed to and not exposed to. This person has eyes that keep streaming after taking Drynol and Vivadrine for the eyes. What can I do? What's Drynol and Vivadrine? Are you familiar with those?
I am familiar with those, and thanks for the question. Actually, they're the same medication, the same class. It's a sodium chromoglycate, which is a mast cell stabilizer. Now, I know I'm waffling a bit in terms of that, but essentially, what I would advise if I saw that patient is to try a different class of medication, such as a topical or an oral antihistamine and or a topical steroid, to see if that actually helps with them. Also reducing their exposure and identifying what it is that they're actually sensitized to.
Okay, because those drops that they're taking, are they drops, the Drynol and Vivadrine?
Yes.
So they're treatments for hay fever?
They're treatments for hay fever. They're taken into the eye. However, what I would also advise this patient is to see whether they have any nasal symptoms, because sometimes controlling the nasal symptoms can actually alleviate what's happening within the eyes. They're all connected.
So what they're taking isn't suiting them?
It's not suiting them.
You need to change. Okay, my 12-year-old son has tried many remedies and his nose remains constantly blocked with itchy, red, watery eyes. It's misery. What can we do?
Yeah, and I think those three words there, it is misery, is really important. And an awful lot of people have miserable times as a result of moderate to severe hay fever. And what can you do? Look, the advice here is really go to your GP to make sure that there's not a differential diagnosis, that there's not something else going on, to check him out for allergies, skin prick testing, making sure that that there's not something else, such as house dust mite allergy as well going on. Mm-hmm. So really, he needs a thorough investigation.
And he might need a referral from the GP, would you say?
He may well need a referral from the GP to a paediatric allergist.
Mm-hmm. Is it okay, says this listener, to take antihistamines every day to prevent the onset of hay fever symptoms? And do you build up an intolerance if you do that?
So most people don't build up an intolerance. In fact, very few people build up an intolerance of taking daily antihistamines. And it's something that I would advise, for example, my severe asthma patients that I see, to take an antihistamine, indeed, 2 or 3 weeks nearly before the onset of what would traditionally be their trigger season, such as hay fever season.
And if you don't treat the symptoms of hay fever, what could happen? I mean, you could develop an infection, could you?
It's not just that you could develop an infection, actually, Claire. The big concern over untreated hay fever, and indeed we have seen this, and there's epidemiological studies to support this, is that you have a greater likelihood of developing asthma.
Ah, which is a big problem.
And that's a big problem.
Okay, so it's important then to treat the symptoms of it. But infection is a consideration as well, is it?
Infection is a minor consideration, but it nonetheless is a consideration. Anything that, any part of the body that's chronically inflamed, such as the sinuses, the lungs, which is what I deal with, obviously, is predisposed to developing an infection.
Mm-hmm. I know that you mentioned that there are antihistamines available now that don't make you drowsy. In fact, most of them, I think, that are on the market don't make you drowsy. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely correct.
So this listener wants to know, is there a difference between the ones that make you drowsy and the ones that don't in terms of their effectiveness?
So that's a great question. The answer to that is no, there's not. And actually, the second generation of antihistamines, which are the non-sedating antihistamines, are very effective and have the same actually effect in preventing and reducing the symptoms of a hay fever trigger compared with the older generations without the anti-sedating effects.
There you go. So they're the same. They're doing the same job. My daughter's doing her leaving cert this year. She suffers horrendously with hay fever. We've tried everything. We have an appointment with the GP tomorrow to get medication to help. So they want to know what they should be looking for. So her eyes get puffed up really badly and her nose runs. So take us through what that appointment should look like from the patient's point of view tomorrow.
So I wish her the very best of luck in her leaving cert. And this is a major issue. Kids coming up to exams, indeed young folks in universities, etc., really adversely affected by this. What I would be advising is an investigation of lifting up the bonnet to see actually what the cause is, what mm-hmm. the triggers are. Is it actually hay fever? Is it house dust mite allergen? Is it a cat allergen? Are there pets in the home? What medication has she tried? What has not worked? What has worked? Is she using them appropriately? Is she consistent with it? Is she adherent to it? Consideration for a paediatric allergy referral or indeed an adult allergy referral in terms of skin prick testing. Sometimes we do blood tests, looking to see whether there may be underlying asthma, etc. Mm-hmm. So it's really important.
Do GPs generally do the allergy testing or do you need to be referred to get that done?
No, some GP centres do actually do allergen testing, but an awful lot of GP services actually don't at the moment. It is costly. It's time consuming. GPs are, you know, really busy individuals. They've had an awful lot lumped on them recently. So it's difficult to get that part of it actually into a consultation. But obviously, as an asthma doctor, as a respiratory physician, I'd love to see more GPs taking on board the importance of allergen testing and skin prick testing.
Okay. This listener has significant hay fever. My eyes are particularly affected. I have asthma symptoms when it gets bad. But in the last 2 years, I've developed oral allergy issues too. I can't eat apples or certain fruits anymore. It feels when I do like my tongue is swelling and it's very uncomfortable. Now, what do you say? That they're wondering whether there's any specific treatment for that.
Yeah, again, and this is, again, really debilitating. And obviously, fruits are good for you. We want people to eat fruits. This sounds like oral allergy syndrome, which is where there is a component of the fruit that she's taking that is actually irritating the lining of the mouth. It's not anaphylaxis, and it's important to point that out in the traditional sense of the word, but nonetheless is a reaction to a content there. Different fruits type could be tried. In terms of looking and digging down and lifting up the bonnet to see what that is, she would need to get proper
testing.
Skin prick testing and sometimes blood testing and see an allergist with respect to that.
Okay, and that sounds like it is the answer there to go and have the test done to find out what's going on. Now, we've had an email from Rory, who's a beekeeper in the Midlands. And Rory has lots of people asking him for a pollen-rich blend of honey. And he would like an expert opinion on whether honey works for hay fever. And we've heard this a lot here on the programme where people believe that it does. Does it?
So we're, I suppose, entering into the realm of alternative therapies or complementary therapies in terms of medicine, etc. Mm-hmm. I have patients frequently who I treat who swear by certain remedies that, despite the fact that you go and look for robust scientific evidence, it's not there, swear that it's actually working. In terms of pollen and beekeepers, pollen, etc., there may be a component of that which is actually working the same way as slits or skits, which is this immunotherapy. So by taking continually, they're actually retraining their immune system. But the studies really aren't there. I'm not saying that what we're being told is incorrect. Mm-hmm. And I really want to reinforce that. Absolutely not. But the studies just aren't there in any robust
But Patrick, I suppose if it's working, you're not going to tell people to stop doing it.
No, 100% no.
Yeah, okay.
And it's honey.
Right. Well, look, for advice, people can go to the Asthma Society website. There's lots of medical advice on there from you and your colleagues who have inputted into that. So people can find out how they can mitigate against hay fever in the coming months. But for now, Professor Patrick Mitchell, thank you very much for coming in to see us today. We'll take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.